If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings on the light and love of the most radiant one. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command. This evening, our seminar topic is neutrality neutralizes polarization. Neutrality is the viewpoint of our spiritual inner awareness. So that's our focus tonight, and let's begin with a little attunement. Take a deep breath. And see yourself extending, but never leaving the very heart, mind, will, purpose of God. Just extending, and that extension is what we call soul awareness, or Christ consciousness, or the living word, or the Son of God. That is the embodied divinity that we are as the Word and the Light, spoken by the Creator, and extending the Creator's image, loving, and nature into time and space. That is who and what we are. That is our function. That is our purpose. We have, in highest truth, never left the heart of God. Except in a little fearful interpretation that a part of us made in an instant long, long ago that was healed in eternity, the instant it arose. But in time, it just seems as though we're remembering. We're returning to that original innocence and holiness and peace. So it's a journey without distance from a destination from which we've never departed. Therefore, it's the pathless path, the goalless goal. It is the one thing we can never, ever lose. Our innocence, our purity, our holiness, our absolute oneness with divine source. So what seems to get lost down here? We get lost in misguided interpretations that the conditioning of our consciousness passes through. And it makes us feel, erroneously so, but nevertheless, we seem to feel lost, entrapped, victimized, separate. And wherever there's a sense of separation, fear arises. And that viewpoint, let's say, that's predicated on the identification with separation, and hence the experience of fear, is what we term the ego, or the false or lower self. And in truth, it's just like a little dark storm cloud that seems to rotate around the periphery of our divine wholeness and radiance. But it captures and snags us where we feel less than the truth that we are. And so we're looking at those little snag areas, because the snagging is what keeps us polarized and caught up in what's called birth and death. Sai Baba calls it birth and death disease, which I think is very good. Because the whole of our life is beyond birth and death. It's never been touched by birth and death. So in the extension into time and space, we lost sight of that eternal life that we're actually living. And so we have identified with this little passage, very brief, the 80 or whatever lifespan we seem to have, predicated on a birth and a death, which in spiritual awareness has nothing to do about anything, or we could entitle it Much Ado About Nothing. So God is in you, as you. And the divine works through you to restore you to your awareness, your remembrance, the revelation, if you will, of your original holiness and wholeness. And when you see yourself as whole, you will know it because you will see the world as whole, not needing anything but your love. It doesn't need fixing. You know, it's quite interesting. The polarizations that are playing out today that we see on television, it's like everyone is all of a sudden taking positions, whether it's political or religious or ideological or cultural, or in terms of preference or belief system, or what one person deems to be their right, what the other person deems to be not their right. You know, we see it every day. And though the specific faces and labels change depending upon the history and depending upon the worldview that we're living in, basically you have the victim and victimizer scenarios being played out. And this polarization is one of the major polarities that hold the third dimension intact and in place. And it seems as if the entire planet is filled with groups of people who are polarized on some issue today. But if you study history, really, it's just a replay of the same polarities. And the only thing that has changed is that today we can see them all being played out on the internet and on the television. So, someone asked me today, it was interesting, on one of my web groups, what is being done to neutralize the Illuminati? And then that I meditated on that the entire day. It was just like that kept going through my mind. Neutralize the Illuminati. It's like, well, what's the Illuminati? Did anyone ever see one? Could you go into a group of people and point your finger and say, there's the Illuminati? And what is the Illuminati? Well, it should be a good thing. It means the ones who are illumined. Shouldn't we all be Illuminati? Oh, no, but it has a negative spin today. It's supposed to be them, you know, them. And then again, the them changes depending upon the worldview and the period of history in which you live. But there's always been a them who points to the them, the ego. It's always the ego that points outside itself to the causes that it feels victimized by. Always. So the very concept of ascribing blame or pointing fingers comes from that immature part of ourselves that is caught in the karma drama of the third dimension and will never escape as long as it keeps pointing fingers and doesn't come into the maturity that involves complete accountability and responsibility for yourself, for your thoughts, for what you keep company with. So the enemies, all of our enemies are within our own household. I forget who said that, but I think it was Jesus in the Bible. Lo, mine enemies are of mine own household. What does that mean? Well, our household, if you think about it, consists of what we live with on a daily basis. What do we live with? Well, basically, we live with our thoughts, don't we? Or moreover, we live with the interpretation that we have made about people, places, things, and events that we then polarize with our thoughts and our judgments and our opinions so that we hang out in certain camps of consciousness, which also change. We can't even hold that constant because the thoughts can change like the wind. Thoughts are governed by the air element, and they change. So our household is our choice of focus of attention. Our consciousness is basically what we would call our household. The great, what would we call him, philosopher, initiate, Krishnamurti, wrote a book entitled, You Are the World. Jesus, in A Course in Miracles, states, we are the world we dream we see. So, what is being done to neutralize the Illuminati? Isn't that an interesting question? Because to neutralize, we must obviously attain neutrality within our own mental states. The only place that we can neutralize anything is in our attitude, our toxic attitude, our polarized attitude of againstness. So neutrality is the viewpoint of soul awareness. You know, perhaps you've asked a similar question yourself. What is being done about? And then, of course, you have to fill in the blank. What's being done about the government? What's being done about the financial crisis? What's being done about the gays in the military issue? What's being done about, fill in the blank. What's being done about? And by the way the question's asked, again, there's the implication that they, whoever they are, should be doing something about that. Okay, we're light workers. Supposedly, we have the desire, at least minimally, not to make our lives more difficult and miserable than they are, but to better ourselves personally and to advance the cause of light in the world. And we all identify with the concept of being here on Earth, assignment with a mission. And yet, we need to walk like on a tightrope here because neutrality is the only way we're going to be able to be effective in our work. You cannot be a liberator if you're entrapped yourself. And you certainly can't be a way shower if you keep going back and forth in polarized states of consciousness. I think the Bible says if the blind lead the blind, they're both going to fall into the ditch. So we have to see through the light of the awakened consciousness, the seer, the divine visionary that lives behind your eye sockets, inside the middle of your skull, and permeates your entire body through its sentiency. It is you, the awareness of light itself, the awareness of the soul, that is able to feel and sense through the five senses and the sixth sense, the environment, and to interpret it in the higher understanding of immortal, eternal truth. Okay, what is that? It's that which changes not. It cannot possibly be truth, satyam, as it's said in Sanskrit, very beautiful word. It cannot be satyam if it can be modified or changed. So what can never be modified or changed? That, or tut, tuam, asi, that which I am. So the I am that is, the God that is, and it changes not. It's not modified by time and space or events or experiences. So reel your projection back up to where we started and realize that consciousness only has extended, but you, as monad, as spirit, have never left the heart of God. So the consciousness projection called the jivi or jivatma in Sanskrit, there's not a really good word to describe it in English. That part of us that extended and then misidentified itself in time and space through conditioning in error is being called to awakening now. And that awakening is happening in many ways. One of the ways that it's happening is all of a sudden everything in your life is in your face and so vivid that it's excruciating, and you just absolutely have to deal with it in some way. There's such a pattern interrupt that's taking place in all of our business as usual momentums. Oh, people were upset today and the last few days with the storms that are literally disrupting everyone's business as usual here in the United States and in many places of the world. There's floods, there's all sorts of stuff going on. And I think we're never better, ever, than when we are reaching out to help others in their moments of extremity. I was watching our Los Angeles team that went into Haiti to pull to life and safety 9 people who had been trapped under the debris. The beauty and the heroism and the courage of these firemen, these rescue people from our Los Angeles rescue teams here was absolutely amazing. And you saw all business as usual was totally interrupted, this horrific event. But what you saw was divinity in operation. You saw the very soul of people coming forward to unconditionally love and serve and help, even at the risk of their own safety and life. All of that went by the by as they came forward to be of service. So as we go through the intensity of these next few years, because within the next 8 to 12 or so years, we are going to go from a polarized world into a world, according to the Avatar Sai Baba, that is going to be one of complete peace and divine awareness. Talk about a quantum leap. So by according to him, 2022, which falls in with the Mayan predictions also, within 2017 to 2022, just prior to his coming back as Prema Sai Baba, we're going to have such a quantum leap in consciousness that we will go into a totally different version of this earth. And he said it will be beyond anything we could even imagine. It will be so wonderful. And yet we hang on for dear death, that ego part of us, to polarization and limitation, and repeatedly defining ourselves in terms of the karma drama and complete ignorance of who we truly are. And therein lies all of our pain, all of our kvetching, all of our complaints and blaming and agitation. When did we ever think trying to work illusion was going to work for us? When did we ever think we were going to be happy and peaceful waging war? Where did we ever get the idea that we could somehow win apart from the whole of humanity? What part of us does that? What part that believes it's separate? Well, let's look at the states of consciousness. What do we have going here on the planet? Basically, we have 4 distinct categories of consciousness. And they're all kind of mixed in there because we're multidimensional. But you're going to hang out in one or more of these except for the fourth one where, you know, it's total commitment. But the first state that you see, the average masses of social pop culture lives as an ego, one that identifies with being a separate being, different and apart from everyone else. And they project fear and play the guilt and blame game. And are very big on the they. What are they doing about it, whatever it is? Or what is being done about blank, whatever you want to fill in there? That's social consciousness. Totally clueless, disconnected from source, not really in harmony with anything, anywhere, at any time. And so, what results from that but chaos and disharmony and more wars? Then you have the second level. You have the psychic consciousness. That's where a lot of people are waking up. But they wake up a little, and largely what they try to do is control and manipulate events to have an outcome that is beneficial to them. They don't care so much about the whole. They just want to find some way to make their own lives wealthier or more successful or more powerful or more noticeable. That's the psychic consciousness. And the psychic consciousness is always trying to look for answers outside of itself. It looks to the stars. It looks to beings in other dimensions and realms. It looks to spaceships. It looks to anything that outsources it from its own accountability. And it tries to know the future. Why? Because it's afraid of losing control. So the whole psychic consciousness is about power and control. And then you have the third category. This would be beings that are actually awakening to themselves as a divine being, as a divine incarnation. This would be called soul awareness. These are the people who are starting to get connected to their inner source, their inner master, the Antahkarana, the inner connecting bridge between the lower personality, ego self, human self, and the human mind and the higher Buddhic or divine mind are becoming connected with a golden inner bridge of consciousness as people go in and out of those levels through meditation, contemplation, and other spiritual practices. They form a golden bridge that connects and integrates those higher levels with their human self. And when they really master that and they are the living love, they are called ones who have become self-realized, or they are living from Christ consciousness. And when you live from Christ consciousness, you see everyone as embodiments of the One Beloved. And you see everyone as holy and whole. And then the fourth are those wonderful individuals, still extremely rare, but once in a while you will encounter one of them, if you're very, very fortunate. And they have become God conscious, which means that they have become one and identified with the all that is. And the only thing I can say about that is that at that state, you see everything as yourself. And that self that you are is all that is. So in Sanskrit parlance, that's called Advaita. Advaita means non-qualified monism. In other words, there are no conditioning on that. That's that eternal truth I was speaking about earlier. That which changes not. Now, as long as you're in a human consciousness, since we are multidimensional, and we dance in and out of all different levels of consciousness, and that's actually a good thing, there's always the possibility that even if you've attained a very high state of self-realization, that you can fall back. What stabilizes you in the higher levels? You need to maintain spiritual awareness or soul awareness or Christ consciousness. It has to be maintained because it can always, let's say, fall out of that level and get snagged or hooked into some form of polarization. So, again, we're talking about neutrality, maintaining that that divine state of neutrality. To exit the third-dimensional arena of polarization requires the cultivation and practice of neutrality. Again, neutrality is the viewpoint of spiritual inner integration and awareness. And it's the very foundation of your spiritual freedom. There is absolutely no freedom in polarization because you've always got energy on an issue. And when you have energy on an issue, the issue is not the issue. It's the energy that's the issue. What's the it? Well, whatever pushes your buttons, makes you mad, pisses you off, aggravates you, annoys you, gets your goat, makes you irritated, makes you impatient, makes you reactive in unloving ways. That's the issue that you need to address in terms of that energy. That's your karma. What's karma? Karma is basically action. The word means action, to do. Comes from the root kri, which means to do, or to act. So karma is simply the result of actions that you have taken, both positive and negative, that in these lower levels have a cause and effect rebound. So whether you do good or evil, it's returned to you in exact manner. It's also called the law of reciprocity. Same thing. Or another way we could say it is that you're held responsible for what you put out through your mouth, your actions, your attitudes, and your behavior. There are ramifications for the choices that we make and how we express ourselves. So, neutrality, again, is not indifference, nor is it ignoring situations that require addressing and taking action. But it is to learn to act without energy of negativity, judgment, condemnation, or even opinions about what you're working with. We can only do that if we raise up and polarize, transcend polarization, and stay focused in the soul awareness. And don't worry, we'll go into how to do that in a moment. But neutrality, it's called in Sanskrit nishkama karma, which means desireless, agendaless actions. In other words, you do it without thought for what you're going to get out of it, without a motive that's selfish or self-focused. You simply act because it is the nature of the soul to reach out and give unconditional loving service. And when you act from that state of neutrality, you don't create any karma. The classic way to transcend karma in India is to offer all of your actions to the Lord so that everything is the Lord working through you and the fruit of your action is given to the Lord. Then you do not create karma. So there's a science to this desireless action, this nishkama karma. And it would behoove us to be a little bit more aware that everything we say, think, and do is going to be something at some point we're going to be held accountable for. And we need to make really soul integrated and infused choices just to keep our plate clean and not pile up more that we're going to have to eat at some point. So neutrality is to live from our dharma, In other words, you go from karma to dharma. What is the difference? Dharma is the behavior of your reality, your real self, operating through you. It's the behavior of your awareness, your enlightenment, your Christ consciousness. And dharma is very much having to do with your age, your stage of life, your nature of qualifications, where you are in your life, and what your training and expertise is. That defines for you your arena where you operate in. And your dharma is to take care of what's in your arena. In other words, what's in your immediate environment. For example, who do you affect with your life? Your arena of contacts is your staging arena through which you practice your self-realization and your service, your selfless service, your mission, if you will. When you learn to interact with the people that is in your immediate environment with harmlessness, with selflessness, with genuine goodwill, you are operating in divine neutrality. Yeah, goodwill is part of that neutrality. Selflessness is part of that neutrality. It's in saying neutrality, but that's just a different way to say Christ consciousness. But if I say Christ consciousness, you're going to think you know what that is. And the truth is, we really don't know what these things are. And we fool ourselves when we get a lot of intellectual understanding without direct realization and experience and revelation. So neutrality is to act in line with your God-given nature, your right action, and the place in which you find yourself and the arena of responsibility that is in your life. So your arena of dharma flows into everyone and everything that your life touches. And to operate in dharma, it has to be from the state of proactive goodness without negativity and without judgment. So proactive goodness would be another way of saying neutrality. Because when it's proactive, it's in the positive vibration. You're not acting because you are trying to fuel your own personal agenda. You're acting because it's your duty to act. You're in a place, and that's what needs to be done at that point, and you do the needful and the necessary. So you act in that detachment, which then, you know, you don't build up karma when you do that. And you always act in a way that supports the highest good for all concerned. If anyone loses in the equation, or is cast aside in some way or harmed, then you're in the karma drama. You're in the polarized state. That's not the highest good. Because when the highest good or the highest God is being served in the situation, there is a win-win for everyone. Not necessarily a preferential level win, but a win in the sense that the highest good is served. And in that serving, also divine justice and divine grace, and all of those things are in operation. In other words, divine order is in that act. So how do you know when you are to act in any given situation? Again, if the situation is an issue that you have energy on, it bothers you in some way, and if within your arena you have the expertise to speak into that situation in some way that's going to make a difference in a positive way, then you do that. But what you see in the human mass consciousness today is what's called the energy of imperil. Imperil, the Master Moria has described as behavior that imperils the resident. the things that imperil us are the things that obstruct our higher light from shining through us. In the case of imperil, the English word, the closest English word would be irritation. But we're not talking so much about the little daily things that get, you know, irritate us. We're talking about the attitude of condemnation that constantly spills forth from people who are not aligned with their soul. In other words, the constant criticism that you hear on the talk shows and the so-called comedy shows late at night, where they just go over and over and over and they mock and condemn and criticize and castigate people and character assassinate and spread all manner of nonsense about people and hold a really negative image over the leaders and the presidents and people in elected positions of office. That's called imperil. And what it does is it just creates something that looks very much in the aura like measles. Many of you haven't seen measles in this generation, but I know I had measles 5 times, so I can tell you what they look like. They're little red blotches that come up under your skin, and they itch like the dickens. And imperil looks like that in the aura. There's little red blotches all over the astral shell, the astral vehicle. And that prevents that higher light from coming down into those emotional levels and expressing divine neutrality and allowing the sourcing of soul awareness to flow through your emotions. So again, you're setting yourself up to miss the very thing you're trying to integrate with. So we must learn to absolutely withdraw words that go into creating polarized states of againstness. The ego is the god, little g, of the cult of againstness. You know, we're not to have any god before God. So when we make our opinion and our judgment more important than the God that we're here to exemplify and embody and serve, then we're idolaters. We're off in the cult of the ego. So again, learn to withdraw making comments that are negative about anyone or anything. Period. Nothing good is served in doing that. Now, if your dharma is to be a trial lawyer and you're standing before the judge and giving testimony, that's a whole different dharma. That's a whole different dance. But I'm talking to those of us who are candidates for ascension or rapture or self-realization or liberation in this lifetime. That's where we have to really, really watch what we put energy into. So, negative emotions, bottom line, never assist, but always taint our actions and create, again, more karma and hence more bondage. So, since we're all interested in not making our lives harder and more difficult than they already are, the only way to keep free of creating more karma is to stay in Christ consciousness. Again, there is no karma in Christ. Jesus said it this way, when your eye is single, your whole body will be filled with light. He was speaking of the third eye, or the tisratil. And remember, the third eye has 3 functions. It can look up through the top of the skull, up through the crown chakra. It can look forward out between the 2 eyes to the future. It can look backward through the back of the head and time travel. So it's really not just one thing. It is a completely unified field of awareness that is 365 degrees. It enables you to see and be everywhere at the same time, and yet in non-localized awareness. So Christ consciousness is maintained by keeping your consciousness focused at the Ajna center, or the third eye. And remember, I said the third eye is not it's not actually a chakra. It's actually formed by the overlapping of the auras of the pineal and pituitary glands, and that little place where the two circles of auric fields overlap forms in sacred geometry the Vesica Pisces, or the little third center that's formed by the overlapping of those two auric fields. And that little center, Vesica Pisces, as it's called in sacred geometry, is the third eye, or Christ center. Now, you can tell when you're centered in soul awareness because you experience being the witness, the objective observer. And that is also the state in which you awaken to the point that you know that you're not the body, you're not your thoughts, you're not your emotions, you're not any of that. You are that which is the observer of the action. And that's called the state of self-realization, or soul awareness, or Christ consciousness. Now, also when you're in that state, you're centered. You're calm and you're neutral. You don't have energy on any issue because you're just observing, but from a point of great clarity and compassion. So all of your energies are able to go without taint of personal human ego. You're able to operate without taint in what you do. So practice finding that place. First of all, you sit each day for a period of meditation. And start small. 5 minutes is better than, you know, sitting for an hour and letting your mind wander. But, you know, however you do it, it's better than nothing at all. So try sitting and focusing on your third eye area. You could even use a statement to contemplate, such as, "I am as God created me." Or, "I am whole and holy." Whatever. No, "I am that I am." Whatever is going to give your mind something to latch on to, your lower mind, so that it can contemplate that. While you work to find that place inside your skull, inside the center of your head. I've often said, imagine yourself as a golden child sitting on a bar that is placed between your two ears. And again, you can use the hue or the Ajna hue. But for this particular place that we're focusing into, it's not so much to soul travel and externalize your body from your body as it is to find that place inside yourself that is completely the objective, neutral observer. It's that part of your consciousness, your mind, that we are seeking to find and locate. And when you do, when you're really focused in there, and you're starting to build some power, you will start having light episodes. These could be flashes, it could be expanding rings, a golden sun. There's all sorts of things that will start to indicate that you are piercing a level of inner empowerment that you are touching to and integrating. And along with that comes often the experience of seeing light surrounding objects. Usually this happens when you're looking at something with an unfocused gaze. Sometimes you're just relaxing or gazing off into the horizon or daydreaming. Or seeing those little sparks that look like they're little dark spots and then they become little bright flashes. You're seeing the vitality modules or the radiant matter. It's also called prana. You'll see that too in the atmosphere. All of these light episodes let you know that for the first time you are starting to really see. A Course in Miracles said that this seeing of light around objects is the beginning of true vision. You're starting to see beyond the ego's projection of separation and duality and polarization. You're starting to see through the viewpoint of the soul, your inner awareness, you're starting to see the divine reality. Just beyond the world that you dream you see is the real world, which is totally and completely gorgeous and holy and whole and perfect and lovable and needs no, doesn't need anything, doesn't need any fixing. So divine reality is different from the ego. The ego projects separation and difference and fear-based scenarios. The divine reality, when it's seen, is revealed by inner revelation. Revelation always has to do with the realm of the divine, and it always shows you that which has always been. So it's always revealing to you that which is eternally one and whole and perfect and divine. So that's how you can tell the difference between your thinking and imagining and direct divine revelation. And it comes to you from within you. So suddenly you begin to see from the upper vision of soul. And when we see through the eyes of soul or Christ consciousness, the world is completely transformed into a place of beauty and love. You know, the mystic is just absolutely in love and captivated by the beauty of everything. That's why when you look at the world through the eyes of a mystic, a person who's divinely intoxicated, intoxicating is the right word, divinely caught up in the rapture of higher consciousness, everything is seen as the beloved. And at that point, you can't even differentiate between your picture and the picture of Jesus Christ or the picture of any great image that you have associated with divinity. You see the one divine in everything. And you're drunk with it. You know, that caused Ramakrishna to dance naked like a madman, not even aware that he didn't have any clothes on. It's caused people to do the most extraordinary things. And to the world, a God-intoxicated, well, I don't like that word because it means poison. So let me think of another word. A person caught up in divine rapture, in these rapturous states, to the world appears mad. And yet the only truly sane person is the person who is mad for God. And when you are mad for God, you reverse the world. You transcend all polarization. And suddenly you realize you're in a different state entirely. You've lost track of the pain and the ugliness and the misery and the suffering and the things that used to be issues. You transcend the angers and the lusts and the greeds and the vanities of the little miserable ego self, so caught up in its own self-glorified prison that it has never, ever, ever seen who is really living in that body, behind that drama, behind that karma. Yeah, there's a beautiful Christ child waiting to be awakened inside every one of us. Every one of us is the Bethlehem, the house of bread, awaiting the birth of that Christ child. But after the birth, of course, there is entering the stream of life and being filled with the divine spirit and being tested and tempted and having that lower nature crucified on the cross of time and space, being and becoming and experiencing, and resurrecting to eternal life as an immortalized Son of God, awakened fully beyond the birth and death drama, awakening into the fullness that we were each and every one of us created to fulfill and manifest. And that Christ consciousness state is so simple, it's so childlike, it's so pure, and yet it's so ordinary, because you don't need to exalt yourself or promote yourself or blow your own horn. You just live very innocently. You enjoy life. You really enjoy life. For the first time, you really taste food. You really enjoy water, the taste of water, drinking water. You really enjoy making love. You really enjoy going anywhere and doing anything that is innocent and playful and fun. And you see people through the eyes of a child, not even comprehending that there could be anything wrong with them. You see them just for what they are, loving them as they are, for who they are and what they are. Not trying to change or fix or manipulate or do anything with that person, but honor, respect, love, and cherish them, and dance with them however they extend that opportunity. And you learn to just be present. Loving, open, available, but lots and lots of humor. I have yet to find one God-realized, self-realized person who did not have an outrageous sense of humor. So one of the ways that we can deflect karma is to learn to laugh at ourselves more. You know, people that are really caught up in self-importance and vanity, they lack humor. And because they lack humor, karma sticks to them like mud, you know? When you laugh in a situation, instead of react negatively, the karma just bypasses you, because laughter doesn't allow negativity to stay. It can't stay in the vibration of laughter. Not derisive laughter, but, you know, just belly laughter. Sri Ananda Moima, the Divine Mother Incarnation, used to say, every day we need to laugh until our whole body shakes like a bowl of jelly. That it's good for our liver, it's good for every part of us. So laughter is so important. Do the things that keep you lighthearted, that keep you laughing, that allows you to lighten up and loosen up, so that you don't get snagged into these polarized states of consciousness that are playing out on the planet today. Don't worry. All is well. God has it covered. We are ascending into the fifth dimension. All you need to do is cultivate that loving. Cultivate it. Practice it. And before you know it, you'll have arrived in that higher version of the earth that Sai Baba said is going to be our experience in this next cycle of time. And in the meantime, there's going to be a lot of stuff going on the planet. So stay in soul consciousness so that you can be a strong, steady pillar of light and an example of what it is to be an enlightened person living on the earth today. In Christ consciousness and soul awareness, the world and everything in it is seen as perfect and whole. And you simply see that souls are doing what souls need to do to gain experience, exercise potential, and expand awareness. And that's the whole purpose of why any of us are here on Earth. That's what Earth is for, to gain experience, and that's what we're all doing. We're experiencing, we're exercising potential, and we're expanding awareness. So keep expanding that divine awareness. And know that as we set the intention before us with each seminar, let us hold this vision that all beings of all the worlds. May they all be radiant with joy. May all be peaceful within and without. And let's close our seminar by chanting Hu, which is a very ancient and sacred name for the Absolute God. Deep breath. Hu. To Commander Lady Athena of the Ashtar Galactic Command, wishing you all a divine week, a blessed week, and an aware week in which you continually expand, so that with every breath you take, that which is your radiance and your eternal holiness may expand and include more and more within the realm of your loving. God willing, I will be with you next week. Adonai.